Thank you, Eddie, and good evening, everybody. It's lovely to see so many folks out this evening. Normally, before a talk like this, there is something stressful that happens. I wasn't at all surprised whenever we forgot the radio mic this evening. And if it's any comfort to Ivan, I got home last week to realise I'd left my laptop in the church, which caused me a fair amount of stress, I can tell you. Well, life is full of pressures, isn't it? The boss gives you unrealistic targets at work. The family give you piles of washing and ironing. Other people give you grief and headaches. And sometimes the really big things happen. Those big life changes mean a lot of stress for us. But very often, it's those everyday little things, isn't it? Those little things that come into our lives, everyday, ordinary things that pile up and that can cause us a degree of stress. Jesus told us to expect it. These things I have spoken to you, he said to his disciples, that in me you may have peace, in the world you will have tribulation. But be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. You will have tribulation. The word there means pressures. You will have pressures. You will have stress. In the world you will have demands, says Jesus. So how on earth do you keep a healthy mind in a world like that? Well, this evening we're going to look a little bit at what stress is and how we can deal with it. Stress is the effect upon us when the demands or the pressures of a situation are greater than our ability to cope with them. And when that happens, when the demands get too much, that then prevents us reaching our goals and achieving what we had hoped to achieve. And so those demands come in as a threat. And when we perceive that threat, we feel stressed. Stress is when the demands are too much and the goals are missed. But why does it feel the way it feels? We all know what it feels to feel stressed. How does the body respond to stress? Well, basically, whenever we perceive a threat, those demands building up, our nervous system and our hormonal system and our bodies, they kick into gear and they get ready for action. And they start to release what are called the stress hormones in the body, the adrenaline, the noradrenaline. You've probably heard of those terms before. And we get, first of all, what we would call an alarm reaction. The adrenaline starts to flow around the body. The blood sugar level increases, and that's because the body is needing more energy. The heart rate increases, and we feel our hearts thumping because more blood needs to circulate around to get oxygen to the muscles and to the brain. Blood flow then to the muscles increases so that there's better performance. Your pupils dilate so that your vision is better. Your blood supply increases to your brain so that you can think more clearly. And basically, your body becomes more alert and ready for action. You'll probably have heard of this before. It's called the fight, flight, fright, or freeze response. So if you're walking home tonight and you're walking around a dark pathway and somebody jumps up from behind a wall, you'll find all of those effects happening in the body. It's an alarm reaction, the body responding to stress. Often that will die down, and that's fine. The body begins to cope. The adrenaline levels reduce, and if the stress goes away, then everything returns to normal. But if the stress doesn't go away, then the body has to keep responding, and this time steroids in the body, they get released and they take over and keep the blood sugar up to produce more energy. That's fine unless the stress continues to be there and doesn't go away. If the stress doesn't go away, then the body's resources begin to get depleted, blood sugar falls, the fat stores get used up, and we enter this exhaustion phase. It's in this phase that the stress begins to affect us physically. It's when we start to get illnesses, it's when we start to lose weight, the blood pressure can go up, we can get heart disease, we can get stomach ulcers, asthma, and various physical effects. So that's the body and its response to stress. And it's important to recognize that, as we'll see in a few moments. It helps us to understand how the body responds as it does whenever there is a demand. Let me just explain a little bit more in this curve here. Now, please don't be put off by this. It's not as complicated as it looks, and we'll try and explain what's going on here. This is where I get to play with this wee pointer. This is great. Now, as the demand increases along this side, this is the demand axis of it. And at this end of it, obviously, there is low demand. At this end of it, you're on holiday, okay? So you're on the beach. Waves are gently lapping at your feet. You're chilled out. You're relaxed. There's not much demand. Now, as it increases along here, the demand, then that sense of demand increases. So this is Monday morning, going to work, 2 weeks worth of ironing to do, that kind of normal everyday demand. Up here, this is where you've got a job interview the next day. There's 4 weeks of ironing to do. Three of your four children have got chicken pox and your mother-in-law is coming for tea. You know, that's high demand. That's high pressure. Along this axis of the chart, we have your performance, and it could be your performance really doing anything, your ability to cope, your ability to function in your everyday life, doing your housework, revising for exams, answering telephones, whatever it is. Your ability to perform increases as you go up this line. Now, you'll notice then that this is a stress response curve, and at this end of the curve, there isn't very much demand, but there isn't very much useful performance either. And sometimes this is called the drone zone. Okay, this is where the couch potato lives. There isn't much demand in his life, but there isn't much useful performance either. And as the demand increases, you'll notice that performance also begins to increase. We'll maybe take an example. Let's take a secretary, and we'll call her Jane. Now, at this point, I want to make a disclaimer. This is not a real person. If you know any secretaries called Jane, this is not them, okay? This is somebody that I have made up. And also, just to warn you, sometimes her name changes during the course of the talk. If I'm having a bad evening, she can become Jean or Joan. And if I'm having a really bad evening, she may even become John. So, if you notice the change to her name, just, you know, say, there's poor old Andrew at the front. He's getting a bit stressed out there. We'll give him a Bible. So back to the curve. And Secretary Jane finds herself then in a job where all she's doing is photocopying and drinking tea. There isn't much demand upon her, and there isn't much useful performance. Poor old Jane finds herself lethargic and sluggish and unhappy and discontent. She's understimulated. She's bored out of her mind, we might say. And that can actually be quite a stressful situation to be in sometimes as well. There's low demand, but also low performance. Well, her boss sees that she's coping well with that, and he gives her a little bit more to do. We need the demand to increase for our performance to increase. And we get into this area of what we might call healthy tension. We need a little bit of challenge in our everyday lives in order to help us to perform and to work well and to keep us on our toes. That's part of how God has created us. He's created us to function in this way. Stress is normal. A little stress is actually a good thing, and it's a normal physiological response. There's enough tension just to be focused, to have enough energy and concentration as we were saying a few minutes ago in that alarm reaction. So Jane then gets a bit more work to do, finds herself doing a bit more typing, answering a few calls, taking minutes at meetings. The demand is increasing, but so is her performance, and she finds herself in this healthy tension sort of zone. She's well able for the task, she's enjoying it, there's enough challenge, enough stimulation, the occasional new thing to do, and she's getting enough satisfaction from her job. Enough stress, or some stress, is good for us. But of course, we need to be careful. Every so often, it gets a little bit much, and as the demand increases, you can find yourself entering this sort of fatigue zone. Now, it's okay if it happens every so often. Maybe a few days like that, you get home in the evening and you can kind of wind down again and the stress levels come down. Or at the weekend, you find you've been working up here all week and then you can begin to relax and to wind down again. The problem happens is whenever we find ourselves constantly pushed over towards this side of the curve. So again, Jane's boss, he realizes that she's coping very well with her brief and he decides then, of course, to give her more work. At this point, she finds the dictation and the photocopying and all of these things beginning to pile up on top of her. She isn't able to stay on top of it all. She feels overwhelmed. She seems to be constantly disturbed by phone calls. She finds herself being very short with the callers. She's thinking about work when she gets home in the evening. She can't get over to sleep. And when she gets back into work, she's tired and she has to drink extra coffee in order to stay alert and to get through her day. And of course, what does she say to herself? She says to herself, as we all do, if I can just get a little bit more done, then I'll be able to stay on top of it. But as time goes on, she's feeling increasingly tired. She's hanging around this fatigue zone. And look at her performance. Her performance is beginning to decline. In this zone, then, we find ourselves becoming irritable. We begin to lose our sleep, our concentration goes down, and we feel tired. And that tiredness begins to set in, and we feel fatigued all of the time. Often, like Jane, we'll use caffeine to try and give ourselves a bit of a perk and to stimulate ourselves, coffee, tea, Coke, other drinks. But of course, it's a vicious circle. They then reduce sleep. We feel less relaxed. We get up the next day, we're more tired again, and we find ourselves getting into this vicious circle that is pushing us further down this side of the graph. Often in that kind of zone there, people are using alcohol as well in the evenings to try and calm themselves and to get some sleep. But of course, it all begins to cause more harm than good. And whenever we notice these signs in ourselves, they're all warning signs. The body is telling us that it needs rest. And yet, like Jane, what do most of us do? We push ourselves harder in order to cope, often ignoring the symptoms that are like flashing lights trying to tell us that there's something wrong. And in fact, ignoring the symptoms is itself often a symptom of the stress. Well, if the stress continues and the demand continues to push on and doesn't let up, we see things declining further and the stress can become chronic. While you're still up here, there's still a chance of you getting back down to this side of the curve, but as things press on further down here, it's harder and harder to get back to that place where you feel rested and relaxed again. And as things press on down, you get into this panic attacks and ill health kind of zone. Blood pressure changes, heart disease, stomach ulcers, irritable bowel, chronic fatigue, those are some of the effects that can happen whenever stress begins to affect the body. There's also evidence that stress begins to lower the immune system, which is why students, for example, will notice that at times, whenever they're doing exams and so on, they're more prone to get colds and that kind of thing. So Jane is noticing that she's feeling increasingly nervous, and at times this escalates for her into panic, acute attacks of anxiety where she feels breathless, her heart is thumping, chest is heavy and tight, she's getting a churning in her stomach, her mouth is dry, muscles are tense, her mind is worried and distracted, and she has this sense that things are out of control. By this stage, Jane is not far really from burnout. She's struggling to keep going. She may be reluctant to go to work. She feels tired all the time, and she may even begin to develop some symptoms of depression, much in the way that we described last week. And her work is really suffering at this point. And it can lead to this situation that we often call burnout. Well, what do we mean when we talk about burnout? It's really, I suppose, a kind of emotional exhaustion. A build-up of all of these symptoms that we've mentioned. The individual is just not getting things done, not performing, not functioning. There can be absenteeism from work, a high sickness rate, or at home just not keeping on top of household tasks. You'll also notice in this kind of phase with people that they often can become quite cynical about, for example, their workplace if the stress is related to that. They become defensive, they find fault in other people. And very often someone like that, if you've ever worked with someone who's gone through that kind of phase, they're perceived as a difficult colleague and someone who's hard to get on with. But very often what's going on is that they're in this burnout phase and have been very stressed out. Sometimes people describe a point of breakdown where they just cannot continue. So one day Jane's boss might walk into her office and there she is at her desk. She's in floods of tears and she just cannot gather herself for work at that point. So what have we learned so far? We've learned that some stress is actually good. A certain amount of stress is healthy. Too much stress, though, is bad, and don't ignore the warning signs whenever they come. And thirdly, if you see them, you must take action. Your body is telling you that it needs rest. Very briefly, let's look at what can cause stress. We've already said that stress happens when the demands of whatever kind are greater than our ability to cope with them. And so for Jane, it's going into work and her to-do list is just greater than she can manage on that day. And she realizes that she's not going to meet her targets. The targets are there. She knows what she has to get done, but everything else is piling in and becoming that threat that we mentioned at the beginning. But of course, it can apply to other areas of life. A common one today might be financial stress. The demand there is the demand for payments, bills, necessities. The demands may exceed our financial capacity to meet them. The goal is to meet those demands, or maybe to save for a holiday, or just to have enough for your car repairs, or enough to stay out of debt. And those kind of goals are put under pressure because of the threat of the demand for payments. And you can see then how the model applies in other areas. Stress can also be caused by life changes along the lines of the kind of thing that we mentioned last week that can also give rise to depression. And we're talking here about the kind of events that cause a change in direction in your life, whether it's a change for the better, actually, or for the worse. Obviously, negative changes in your life are going to, we expect anyway, have negative effects. And there are scales out there which measure this kind of thing. In one scale that measures the kind of effect of stress of certain life events, I'll mention the top six now to you. Number one, death of a spouse. We could understand that. Two, divorce. Three, marital separation. Four, a jail term. Five, death of a close family member. And number six, personal injury or illness. Now, whenever you hear a list like that, you can imagine that events like that will obviously be stressful. But weighing in at number seven is marriage. I see a few of you smiling at that and nodding. Some of you may not query that one, but again, you can see how that can be the case. A couple coming together for the first time and beginning to live together and share their lives together, it demands a change for each of them, even though it's seen as a very positive thing. Other positive changes, like job promotions, for example, can be causes of stress. Because what happens again is that the new demand is coming in and is preventing us reaching other goals in our life. So major life events can be a cause of stress. Personality, certain personalities may be more vulnerable to stress. People, again, with very high standards and high expectations of themselves, understandably, I suppose, can be more prone to stress. Those who have a sense of being wanting to be in control, the control freaks that you know around you, they can be more prone to stress. People who don't like to appear weak or vulnerable and who are therefore putting themselves under pressure, trying to create a front all of the time of coping and being able to manage, I suppose there's a bit of that in all of us, isn't there? People who are driven, ambitious, time-conscious, the kind of what's sometimes called the type A personality. Those kind of personalities can be more prone to stress. And you'll see here then that the kind of stress response curve that we mentioned earlier can be different for different kinds of people. So there are some of those personalities who actually have quite a low stress response curve. It doesn't take a lot of demand for the performance to begin to go down. They're quite prone to stress. There are other kind of superhuman people who are able to manage massive amounts of stress and cope with lots and lots of things, and still the performance continues to rise. So we're all made differently. God has created us in different ways, and we all have different gifts. And I suppose a graph like that reflects this. It'll not surprise you as well to learn that conflict in relationships as well can be a major cause of stress. The goal there is that, of course, we want to get along with people, we want to be at peace with people, but then there's a tension, there's an atmosphere, there are arguments, there's hostility, there's distance, there's coolness, and we don't quite know how to resolve it. The goal is to be at peace with someone. These other things come in as a threat, and it can feel very stressful for us. So we've looked a little bit at what stress is, how the body responds, and how it affects our functioning, and at some of the causes of stress. Well, I suppose what you really want to know is, how on earth do we deal with it? How do we cope with stress in our life? There are lots of ways of dealing with it, and this is one of them. For those that can't read that, it says, place on a firm surface. 2, follow the directions in the circle. Repeat until you are unstressed or become unconscious. I can't say I have tried that one, but I'm sure it works. So let me remind you again, we've said that stress is the effect upon us when the demands of a situation exceed our capacity to deal with them. And that definition of stress gives us a clue as to the kind of things that we can do to manage stress. Basically, there are two broad groupings of things that we can do. We can either take the situation, which is stressful with all of those demands, and we can try to reduce the demands of the situation. And we'll look at that. Or we can take us. That was me after I found I'd left my laptop in St. Colmenelles last week. And we can try to increase our own ability to cope with them. So let's look at that for a few moments. Here are 10 questions then for highly stressed saints. First of all, we need to ask the question, what needs to change? If we're to do something about this situation where the demands are too great for us, it's important to look at that situation, to look at the demands and to ask ourselves the question, what needs to change? To try and identify the source of stress. For example, does work need to change? Does Jane need to go to her boss about the levels of work that are coming her way? Does she need to ask him, could someone else come in to cover the phones? If home is stressful, does a husband need to change his way of doing things? Does a wife need to change? Do some responsibilities need to drop? And of course, all of this can be easier said than done. But the important thing, first of all, is to ask this question, what needs to change? It's an important one, I think, especially for anyone who's ever been off work with a work-related stress, because really, there's very little point in returning straight back to the situation that caused the stress in the first place. And it's important, where possible, to make sure that there are some changes made before you return back into that workplace. Well, how do we change something? And here, just very briefly, a few simple steps. It's not rocket science. It's fairly straightforward to help us to try and change things and try to solve some of these problems of increased demands. The first one is probably the most important: identify the problem. So let's say Jane, for some reason, loses her job, and she and her problem then becomes she has mounting debt. She needs to look at that situation and choose one particular issue to deal with. And it's best to try and choose the issue that you're likely to be able to influence the most, the one that's most likely to change, that you're able to have some control over. So try to identify the problem. Second, brainstorm solutions. So for Jane and her debt, we could help her to brainstorm some solutions to that. She could borrow. She could try to return to work. She could maybe budget in her current situation and maybe organize repayments. Or she could rob a bank. Now, it's important to be broad in these solutions. It's easy to kind of then eliminate the ones that are really not going to work. So brainstorm solutions and then weigh the pros and cons of each of the solutions. So return to work, well, that would help, but maybe she's not really quite there yet and able to do that. She could borrow, well, it's a short-term solution, but she'll have to make sure that she can make up the repayments. Or she could try and budget well now as much as she can and begin small repayments. It's maybe not an immediate fix, but at least it's a start and can help her feel that there's a bit more control over the situation. She then chooses the best option, and then importantly, she puts it into practice. So for example, if she chooses the budget and repay option, she then sits down, maybe with someone, with her, a friend who can help her. She works out the steps. Perhaps she needs help to do this. She needs to budget for the home situation, for other things, and she needs to go and find out about repayment schemes. And so she tries then to put it all into practice. And then eventually she reviews it to see if it's all working or not. So remember, we're looking at how to try and reduce the demands of a situation. Sometimes things need to change, and this is one way of doing that. Another important question to ask is, have I prioritized? Part of the stress of a situation can be that there is just far too much to do. This is a picture of my secretary at Hollywell. This is her on a good day. This is definitely a lady that needs to prioritize, isn't it? So how do we help her? Well, the important thing that we need to try and do, first of all, is if it seems that there's just far too much to do, you know, this overwhelming list of tasks or things to get through, is to try and bring some control into that. And one helpful way is to make a list of the whole lot. Get a big piece of paper, make a list of all of the stuff that needs done. Very simple. And then ask two important questions. The first is, what's urgent? What needs to be done quickly? What needs to be done for a deadline? What is an issue maybe of faithfulness and dependability, and I need to get this done soon? So what's urgent? And you try to take the things out of the list that are more urgent. And then what's important? What are the things that if I don't deal with soon, they'll have some kind of major consequences? Or Another way of looking at that one is, well, what does God want me to do here? What are his priorities for me in this situation? And then what we can do, some people find it quite helpful then to kind of construct a little box, things that are important, not important, or less important, things that are urgent, more urgent, and less urgent. And of course, then it's the things in this box here that are both important and urgent that become the priority. And of course, the tempting thing, of course, is that we see everything is urgent and we have to try and use some judgment in order to help us prioritize. So, secretary snowed under with tasks, a housewife inundated with work at home, Jane and her finances as she looks at, you know, what do I do now? Mortgage repayments, what about the other bills? What about the food bill? And she then has to try and rank these things and prioritize them. Prioritizing can be a really helpful skill to learn even in everyday life. It can help to bring a sense of control into a situation which seems out of control. It can also help us to learn to say no to things. It's a great skill to learn to say no. It can help us to fend off extra pressures at work, maybe even in church or from friends where demands can come in. And of course, it's something which, if we're being honest, we all find very difficult to do. Why is it, do you think? Why do we find saying no so difficult? Perhaps it's because we don't like to disappoint people. Perhaps it's because we feel the need to be helping others and to be helpful. And perhaps part of it is, if we're honest with ourselves, a fear of men, a fear of what others will think of us if we refuse them. Maybe underlying that, a bit of pride if we really look deeply enough. I sometimes think of Jesus. Crowds pressing in on him, people wanting to be healed, wanting to be counseled, wanting to have some time with this man, wanting to be blessed. Do you ever think he had to say no? I'm pretty sure he had to say. I'm pretty sure that at some point, as the crowds pressed in, there was someone that finally he had to say, I'm sorry, no, not this evening. And he had to turn and to leave them. How else would he have had time off with his disciples and time to go off and pray and so on? And it's easier for us to say no when we have our priorities sorted out, whenever we know what's important, what's urgent, what before the Lord he wants us to do. Now, some of you might say, but, you know, does God not expect some sacrifice of us? And yes, to some degree, that's true. We're not called to be selfish. We're not called to put ourselves first. And there is a risk as we prioritize that we can become self-focused. But as we've seen this evening, stress is something that can cause ill health. And if our bodies come under too much stress, it will affect our ability to carry all kinds of responsibilities, affect our ability to help and to love other people practically if we are taken out of the picture through ill health. And so managing our own stress is a way, indeed, of keeping ourselves fit in order to help and serve and love other people. And so be careful then that you work out this issue of priorities well. So, prioritization. Let's move on then, ask another question. Remember, we're wondering here how we can reduce the demands of the situation. And a third important question to ask is, am I managing time? This is something that as Christians we're commanded to do. Paul says in Ephesians, redeem the time because the days are evil. Make the most of your time. Redeem it. And again, if time management is a problem for you, then get a big diary, a big planner, a big sheet of paper, and look at your time and begin to plan and to organize your time. Again, prioritizing can be helpful here. We ask ourselves, well, what are the important things then that I need to get done? How much time do I have in my day or in my week? And I begin to timetable things out. And remember to try and timetable in a rest and breaks and so on where possible. Whenever you're doing this kind of thing, let me warn you, it's important to make sure that your goals are achievable. The big risk, the big mistake that we always make is that we think, happy days, I'm getting this sorted out, and we begin to pile in all of this stuff into a timetable, and before we know it, we're utterly stressed out again because the demands are far too big and they're unrealistic. We've got to make sure that the goals are achievable, that we are realistic about what we can manage, and that we are flexible. We can have a nice, fine plan like this, but you and I know that life is not always predictable, and there has to be a degree of flexibility. We don't always know what's going to happen next. You never know when you're going to leave your laptop behind in the church, and you get up the next day, and you know you're not able to do the things that you had planned to do. As well as that, we've got to be disciplined. Yes, there's to be flexibility, but on the other hand, there's got to be discipline whenever we set these goals for ourselves. So time management is important, but don't be too legalistic about it, and don't put yourself under more pressure with lists and demands. Be careful with that one. Again, though, it's another way of trying to introduce a sense of control and being able to manage a situation when it seems very overwhelming. If you set aside a bit of a block of time to do something, there's Jane has put in between 10 and 12:30, she'll do some typing. Try to keep to that kind of compartment of time. This is a thing called compartmentalization that people talk about. If you've set aside that amount of time, don't be tempted to kind of slip over that time. The thing to do is set yourself that time, stick to it, but maybe have another time in the week then when you'll tie up the loose ends and try to get things finished up that you haven't been able to get done in other compartments of time, and try to stick fairly much to that, because if you begin to slip over, again, everything gets knocked out of sync and the whole thing can become quite stressful again. Finally, don't give up if it falls apart. Sometimes it will. Just look at it again, review it, see where it went wrong, and try to redo the timetable again. So that's a little bit just about time management. And finally, in terms of reducing the demands of the situation, ask yourself, can others help? We're commanded to bear one another's burdens. It's a good thing to ask other people to help you. Good for you and also good for them. It's an opportunity for them to help to bear your burden. Sometimes I would refer to Moses. I don't know if you remember the incident in the wilderness where Moses was getting completely stressed out by all of the people that were coming to him. I don't know how he did it, because there were thousands, millions of people with him there in the wilderness. Moses was the sole counselor for all of these people. I just imagine this huge queue of people, and poor old Moses there listening to all of their problems. And then along comes his father-in-law, Jethro. And Jethro says, Moses, why are you listening to all of these people on your own? You're going to wear yourself out. You've got to get some help here. And of course, Moses then gets other men and delegates to them. And that's a good lesson for us to learn as well. Can others help? The support, the understanding, the help of others can be very important. So, four questions which can help us to reduce the demands of a situation. How then do we increase our own capacity? How do we increase our own ability to cope with stress? And here probably is the most important question. Do I need a break? Remember what we said earlier, a lot of the signs of stress are really flashing lights, your body telling you warning signs that you need a rest. Whenever things have built up in work and really you're hitting a point where you need to come out of work because of stress, usually you need a number of weeks at a minimum for that to begin to take some effect. A few days really doesn't do it. You'll find that it takes the first week to begin to kind of calm down. The second and third weeks, you're beginning to kind of see things a bit more clearly and get a bit of distance between yourself and the situation. And then it's by the fourth week, again, at a very minimum, where things are beginning to where you're beginning to feel like you could begin to pick things up again. And really that's the minimum. For many people who have had to come out of work, it's been a lot longer for the body to recover, but it needs that time and the break is required. Let me ask you another question. What's your Sunday like? God has prescribed for us a day of rest in seven. And very often, don't we? We joke about Sunday being the busiest day in the week. And perhaps we've come to see that as acceptable. And perhaps we need to recover the idea of rest as part of our worship of God. Indeed, not only part of our worship, but a command of God to us. And I think it's very important that we begin to see our Sundays and our worship together as fellowshipping together in the rest that God has given us, and indeed worshiping the God of rest in that rest. Sleep is another of God's gifts. Psalm 127 verse 2 says, "It is vain for you to rise up early to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep." Do we use that gift of God? Do we take that gift of God and receive it? Or are we in the habit of robbing ourselves of the enjoyment of that gift of God? We need to be so careful and see rest really as a priority. Also important in terms of this broad question of needing a break, to reduce things like caffeine and so on in the various drinks, because that can increase feelings of stress. Another important question in terms of increasing our ability to cope is, should I see a doctor? Again, yes, if you're feeling some of these symptoms of stress, I think it's useful certainly to visit a doctor. We've seen that it can tip over into depression. Sometimes things like antidepressants are useful if the stress has become more chronic and taking a rest or a break from work or whatever is not enough to really give the body that recuperation. And then another important question which we need to sometimes ask is, am I cut out for this? It may refer to responsibilities in the church. It may refer to responsibilities again in work. And we're asking the question why has this happened to me? Have I the right abilities for this task, for this situation? Have I the gifts here? Maybe I need some training. Maybe I need to develop some extra skills. Maybe I need to think about a change in career. What I would say is, in asking that question, it's important that you're not asking that right in the middle of the stress, or at least not making big decisions whenever you're still feeling unwell. It's important to put some distance between yourself and the situation so that you can weigh it up a bit more clearly. So, a few questions then that will help us to increase our ability to cope. Stress, however, and periods of stress in our lives are an opportunity for us to ask some of the deeper questions of life. And I want to just take a few minutes to look at some of those as we close this evening. An important question to ask is, where do the demands come from? And maybe more importantly, are the demands really a threat? Remember what we said earlier? Whenever the demands come in and the mind perceives them as a threat, it's when it goes into that alarm state and reacts it with stress. Whenever the work piles on, where does that come from? When the car won't start on the way to the doctor's appointment, where does that come from? When the baby throws up over your best Sunday suit at 5 to 11 as you're rushing out the door on a Sunday morning, where does all of that come from? Well, in Jane's case, we could have said that it was taking on too much work, or the debt building up because she couldn't work, or maybe it was the bubble bursting on the housing market, which meant that work was hard to come by for her. But ultimately, who is behind all of these things? Well, it is the Lord. It is God. A God who is wise, a God who is good, a God who is sovereign and in control, and a God who knows what is best. And it's important for us, and it's very difficult sometimes in the midst of stress to do this, but it is important to take that step back and to see the bigger picture of what God is doing in your life as the demands come in, and to ask that question, are these demands really a threat whenever I know the God who is in control of it all? And whenever we begin to see God in the picture, then we can begin, I think, to see a purpose in these demands and a purpose in these experiences of life and these periods of life that sometimes God brings us through. Remember the example of Joseph. For him, there were so many stresses, so many threats. Remember his brothers, even a threat to him. And what does he say to them? He says, what you meant for evil, it was evil, it felt evil, it was a stress, it was a demand, it was a threat in that sense, God meant for good. And it's important to see God in the picture. Are the demands really a threat? Where do they come from? Another really important question is to ask, what does this say about my heart? You see, although we can see God in where the demands come from, we also have a part to play. And it can be helpful for us to ask questions like, well, what does this say about my goals in life? What am I aiming for? What is important to me? What do I worship? What do I desire? What am I going after with my life? For Jane, was it the goal of promotion? Was it earning money for that holiday? Or was it perhaps to just please other people so that she would be well thought of? What was going on at the level of her heart? A period of stress can be an opportunity to ask that kind of question. How much do we think God needs us? Do you really think that God needs you to sit up late, rise up early? Remember Psalm 127 again. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep. Now you might say to yourself, well, I don't really think that way. But I wonder how many of us approach life and work and even service for God as if it all depends on us. So what rules your heart? What rules the real you? What's your priority in life? Is it to seek God? Is it to seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness? What is it that you really desire? In a time of stress, God is perhaps showing you something very, very important about your heart that you might not learn any other way. What does this say about my heart? And finally, where can I find true rest? Why is it that stress is such an epidemic in our age? Is it all to do with society? Is it all to do with the age in which we live? Or what is it about man that makes us so susceptible to stress? Why is it that peace and restfulness are not the norm? And where on earth can we find them in such a stressful age? I wonder, have you ever asked any of those questions of yourself? Well, as I've said, a period of stress can be a wake-up call for you and can be a call for you to examine yourself and to examine your life. Ultimately, whenever you think about it, if you cast your mind back over all of those questions and all of those various strategies for coping with stress, they are all ultimately ways of trying to find relief. They are a search for rest. Where can we find ultimate rest in such a stressful world? Well, the answer is found in a person, in a very modest, unassuming man, the kind of man in whose presence you could relax, approachable, down to earth, a restful man. He had the answer. Let me remind you what he said. He said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." The man's name, of course, is Jesus. And when he said those words, first of all, he was talking to a crowd a bit like this, just a crowd of ordinary folk. And as they listened to him say those words, there is one image that would have immediately jumped into their mind's eye. And it's an image of cows. Big cows. Cows that are coupled together with a yoke. The yoke, of course, was this wooden bar that attached these two animals together so that they could work effectively. And as the people were confronted with this picture of the yoke, it was a picture to them, first of all, of their lives. It was a picture of the daily grind, the toil, the labor, the pressure, the strain, the weight, the sweat, the tiredness, the exhaustion of life. It was a picture of their lives. But it was also a picture to them of their hearts before God, laboring to be made right with God, laboring and yet weighed down with the wrong that they had done against this God, weighed down with their guilt. A picture of their lives, a picture of their hearts. And what does Jesus say to them? He says, "I will give you rest." There they are, weary, burdened, and Jesus offers them relief. Exactly what they need. Someone just to come along and give them that rest. And the picture there that he gives of the animal under the yoke is of another coming alongside underneath the yoke and helping to lift it so that the first animal that's weary and under pressure has its yoke lifted up and is able to find some relief and to recover and to collect its strength again. And this is what Jesus is saying here that he does. He says, "I will give you rest." How does he do it? Well, he tells us, he says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart." Take my yoke is the first thing he says. Keep in step with me. Come alongside me. When you're carrying Jesus' yoke with him, you've got to stay close with him. In the picture that Jesus gave there, a younger animal yoked beside a bigger, older animal, if the younger animal began to veer too far in front or to the side or even fall behind, what would happen? The yoke, the weight of it would fall more onto that animal. The place where there was greatest rest was closest to the first animal who was carrying the burden. The burden was lightest and most manageable when close and in step with the first animal. That's what Jesus is saying. Keep in step with me. And then he says, learn of me. We're to learn something from him. And it's important to recognize that when we feel stressed out. We're learners. We've got our L plates up. We're learners. We're followers. It keeps us in the right place. And what are we to learn from him? He says, learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. How on earth does that help us with stress? Well, Jesus says that he is gentle. He is meek, first of all. What does that mean? It means that he accepts whatever God deals him as good without resisting, without disputing. He trusts in God's goodness and control in the situation. That's what it means to be meek, to be accepting, to be gentle. He's also not only meek, but he is lowly in heart. He's got the heart of a slave. And we are to learn this of him. What does this mean when the demands get too much in your life? It means that you don't react against it by being self-assertive or by being aggressive or trying to dominate the situation or trying to take control. Very often those things make the situation more stressful. We're told today that one of the ways of dealing with stress is by being more assertive. Now, there are some aspects of assertiveness that are fine, but much of it is about trying to assert yourself, take control, dominate the situation. It's the opposite, really, of what Jesus is telling us here to do. He's telling us to be gentle, to be lowly in heart. When the stress hits, yes, we do what we can to cope along the lines we've discussed this evening. We don't hide, but we react to it all with meekness. We accept what God is dealing us without resisting or shaking our fist at him. It's not that we don't take action, but we don't look for the ultimate rest in any of those things that we try to do. We are meek. We are lowly in heart. We're following him. We trust that he's good. We trust that he's in control. And we trust that he knows what's best. Really, we face our pressures the way that Jesus faced the greatest stress or pressure that anyone could ever face, that of the cross, meek and with the heart of a servant. And in that way, Jesus is saying, I will give you rest. Learn of me, and I will give you rest. Don't do home or work or church like it all depends on you. Jesus says, be lowly. Be humble. It doesn't all depend on you. Don't overstretch yourself. Don't overstretch your limits. Be careful of pride that drives your expectations too high. Be lowly in heart. Be meek. Be lowly. Jesus is certainly not saying that as a Christian you'll never face stress. Far from it. You still have a yoke. We may even expect more stress or tribulation in this life. But as Christians, Jesus gives us his yoke, which is easy, and his burden, which is light. He lifts away the burden of our guilt. He relieves the pressure of our sins. And we can face the strains and the stresses of this life humbly, meekly, following him and knowing a true, deep-seated rest and relief, which this world will never, ever give you. If you don't know him this evening, your stress, in a sense, is a picture of your deeper need. And Jesus says to you, come to me, and I will give you rest. Thank you very much.